Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show.
Well, hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. Boy, I can't believe it. We're in March, and so for those of us in inclement weather for the last 6 months, however long it's been, we have the promise of spring around the corner. So that always lightens my mood and very happy. We still get snow and some nasty days in March, but at least at this point we know we're closer to spring well than we were at the beginning of January, which you wouldn't believe. Dr. Marie and I are going to be talking about the joy switch tonight, and that's one of those things that brings me a lot of joy. It's also Brain Injury Awareness Month, March is, and so we're going to do, I'll be doing a little kickoff to that. Well, we're doing some kickoff in attitude and joy in the beginning, and I'll talk about it a little bit more, the prevalence and so forth, in the second hour of the show. For those of you who are new around here, Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. Guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a we recovery program because it is in the we that we find the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. And for that, it takes a good bit of warrior. Now, I do have an announcement guest first that I'm going to bring on, Michael, who many of you have heard. And then Dr. Maria Romanis is going to talk with us tonight about the joy switch. Got to have it. And boy, these are challenging times to get it. It's that discussion is prompted by a book of the same name by Chris Corsi, and it inspired Dr. Maria, so we'll find out why and hopefully learn to locate our joy switch. But before I bring on Maria, I'm going to bring our friend Michael on again in terms of, well, just what word would I have all kinds of words I would use to describe Michael, but he's really a miracle for sure. And he's been working on a project, and I knew him back when it was building ramps to come off houses, accessibility ramps. And because he lives in Florida, he had a great idea when it came to the beach, and he kept people who had mobility issues and couldn't walk in the sand and actually get down and enjoy the beach in mind when he came up with this idea. He's going to read us a statement about the status of this ongoing project that he's been doing. And I thought it was great because some people are planning vacations now, And if you have mobility issues, Pinellas County in Florida may be where you want to go. And if you really like this idea and live in another county or another state that has an ocean, you may want to get a hold of Michael or take something like this idea to your city council and see if we can't make the beaches all over the country accessible to everybody. With that, I'm going to bring on Michael real quick. Michael, how you doing tonight?
Kim, it's Michael from St. Petersburg Beach, Florida, Tampa Bay area. Yes, hello. I just wanted for National Head Awareness Month, I just wanted to read this thing about the Moby Mats and what I'm doing with them, okay?
Please, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Okay. People from near and far, come to Tampa Bay beaches to enjoy them. Moby mats are non-slip permanent pathways to the beach, safely and easily for people with disabilities and our older community down here. We have a very big older community. According to the CDC, 28% of adults in Florida live with disabilities and mobility challenges. 30 parks already have these Moby mats installed up and down Florida's coastline, and only 3 now in Pinellas County. I want to change that. This forever. I want to change this forever. Think of how many children and veterans would be able to take these mats down to the water and sit with their families in wheelchairs comfortably. When they are laid down on the sands up and down Pinellas County beaches. Thank you, Kim. I appreciate it. And I wish you have a great night.
Well, thank you. Now, just tell me real quick, and then I'll let you go and come back next month. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. I do mean next week. Don't know where my head's at. We can talk more about it. But you managed to put one of these ramps in. The idea that I was really excited about is now you've got funding, isn't that correct, you presentation?
It's amazing.
And got good
yes,
news?
It's amazing.
Funding for
I got
more.
Total funding. These mats are very expensive to lay on the beaches. And for 4.5 years, I've been working on getting funding. And I got a phone call like maybe 4 months ago that I'm fully back. It's unbelievable. So I will lay Moby mats up and down as long as they give me permission, because I do have to be careful with the turtles. I hate to tell you, Kim. I cannot touch the beaches when it's turtle season.
No, not turtle season. Okay. Well, you are
And I'll come back on and talk about these later when I have these laid. You go do your regular program. Thank you for letting me speak. I dearly appreciate it.
Thank you for your resilience.
Yes.
And your diligence in doing this.
Yes, and in the papers, and when I get interviewed on television, I will use that speech and only that speech, because I have a brain injury, as you can see, and I get confused. And my mind goes in every which way. So I wrote a nice speech to be laid out, and I just laid it out on you guys. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Michael. And if I don't talk to you before, we'll talk to you next week, same time, same place.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, Kim. Good night.
Thank you so much for letting us know. Good night. Awesome. Well, I've got to say, his resilience and diligence and all of the work he's done. Michael's had his brain injury since he was a child, and he's written 3 books. As I said, he was doing construction work, making homes accessible with ramps, got this idea about the beach, put in 1 beach mat on his own, and then went and shot his shot to the council and got total funding to put these in many different places around Pinellas County. So great example, as is Dr. Maria, of people who suffer a major brain injury and they don't let that stop their life. They had goals, and the goals might not have gone exactly as smooth as they planned or exactly like they planned, but they're achievers, not quitters, and it shows. With that, I'm going to bring on Dr. Maria Romanis. Welcome to the show. Glad you're back.
Hi. Hi, Kim. It's good to be back. You know, hearing Michael makes me smile. I really appreciate what he's doing. And maybe someday we'll meet, because I also live in Florida. Maybe one day we'll meet. In any case, I wanted to talk to you, kind of tell you a little bit of history about, I want to tell you about, discuss relational circuits tonight. And relational circuits are kind of the part of the brain, it's the official kind of word for it in the scientific literature would be the limbic system, okay? And it's your, like, emotional regulation system, okay? And the primary neurotransmitter for that system is dopamine, okay? So you might recognize that, you know, there are a lot of antidepressive medications and medications for, you know, various brain conditions that, you know, work on the serotonin system. And now there are other neurotransmitter systems as well. But tonight we're going to be focused on the relational circuits, okay? And the thing is, there are times when everything is going well in life and we're having good days, you know, things are the sun is shining, we wake up on the right side of the bed, you know, our loved ones, you know, treat us well, you know, and then, you know, we might, you know, take, you know, get in the car and be driving to work. And all of a sudden, you know, someone will cut you off, okay? And, you know, do something really, really, really careless. And it, you know, I'm just kind of telling this, so you kind of feel, your panic in that moment, you know, your brain kind of goes in a tight, kind of has a little bit of a seizure, and you're gripping the wheel and your heart is beating fast. And all you could think about in that moment is that driver and how, you know, how they almost, you know, caused an accident or, you know, and in that moment, all of your peace, all of your joy, all the good feeling that you had are gone. Okay. And
yeah.
So that would be, you know, going from relational mode to not relational mode. Okay. So for your relational circuits to turn off. Okay. And I remember in the past, like when something like that would happen, I would be stewing about it for, you know, 20, 30, even an hour, you know, it would shake me that much, you know, and that's pretty much all that my mind could focus on was how upsetting that was. Okay. And then, you know, if I was, was talking with friends or with family, I would be telling them about that situation. And I, you know, would almost feel all those same feelings again, okay? So that would be like an example of when your relational circuits turn off, okay? What the joy switch does is it helps you turn your relational circuits back on again, okay? So, after I learned how to turn these relational circuits on again, a similar circumstance, okay, where someone, the same sort of scenario where somebody, does something careless, almost causes an accident, yes, it upsets me for the moment, but, probably within 3 or 5 minutes, it's not bothering me anymore, okay? It's because I've learned how to use this joy switch, okay? And it has really been life-changing. I learned about this joy switch back about 12 years ago. And at the time, I was parenting 3 teenage sons, and and they were all teenage. Yeah, they were all teenagers at once. And when they would challenge, they were really good kids. I mean, my sons were really good kids, and they obeyed us because they loved us. And it was, my husband and I are really laid back. And we had, a peaceful home, never yelling or screaming. It was that way for the first 17 years, let's put it that way, okay? And then, about 10 years into it, my oldest son started having, when he was 15, depression, okay? Suicidal ideation, all that, midlife crisis sort of stuff, okay? And so, my mind was like tracking with him, okay? And so I was like, it was like always on my mind. And I couldn't, I couldn't settle, okay? And then a couple years later, it seemed like each of the sons, because they're 2 years apart, about. And about 2 years later, my second son hit his kind of oppositional defiant phase, like a rebellious phase, okay? And then about 2 months late, 2 years later, my third son, okay? And in the midst of it, there was something that happened in 2010 where my son was crossing a boundary, okay? And my friends, I told them what had happened, and they were, they're like, you need to take care of this, okay? And so I came home determined to take care of this, okay? And in the process of saying, things sort of like got amplified, and there was almost like an altercation between my son and me, okay? It was that, it went that much out of control, okay? Because I, with my brain injury, okay, I can do well when things are peaceful, okay? But when I, when I'm trying to engage in conflict, my relational circuits turn off, okay? And I don't see my son in that moment as a loved one, okay? As someone I care about, someone whose opinion I want to hear, someone whose, creativity I should appreciate, all that different stuff. And he's not seeing me the same way either, okay? But I was, I was being over the top. He was being over the top. And it ended, kind of ugly and really surprising, rocked my world, okay? And one of my pastors at church had recommended that my husband and I go to this emotional or relational skills training course called Thrive, okay? And it's a 1 week intensive, and then you do a year of practice exercises, and then another week intensive, and then a year of practice exercises. and then a third year intensive and another year of exercises, okay? And so my husband and I did track one, okay, and it was focused on learning right brain skills, okay, emotional regulation, maturity skills, basically, and it wasn't like lecture. It was like putting us in situations where we would practice these things, okay, and we'd practice these things with one another, and immediately upon coming home, okay, my second son, that next day after we got back, everything that I was saying in the house, he had some sort of smart aleck remark to make about it, about whatever I said. You know, that made, you know, how dumb mom is. I mean, basically that's kind of, you know, can you believe that she said that? You know, basically he was being extremely negative. And I said, Timothy, why are you being so negative? And he said, because you annoy me so much. And instead of flying into my normal way that I would, my relational circuits would turn off, and I wouldn't be able to like, kind of hold back, okay? And especially for a person with brain injury, we have a hard time holding back because our cortex, does not supervise our emotions really well, okay? And we become, there is emotional lability. It's part of our package that we get when we have a brain injury, particularly, you know, a more moderate or severe one like mine or Michael's or yours. So going back to what Timothy was saying. So instead of saying, how dare you speak that way to your mother, da, 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 you know, don't you, you know, aren't you ashamed of yourself, da, 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 you know, that sort of thing, which would have been normal for me before. Okay, I was able to stay relational in that moment. And I said, I'm sorry, Timothy. What is it about our relationship that's not satisfying to you? And it came out smooth as water, okay? And you know, because my husband and I spent a week kind of practicing, you know, turning our relational circuits, you know, how to turn them on, how to keep them on, how to recognize when they're off, you know, learning that whatever you say or do, whenever your relational circuits are off, are never going to produce something life-giving. It's going to be harmful. So that was one of the things I needed to learn, is to recognize my relational circuits are off and not engage, okay, step back. But also in conflict, like I was experiencing with my son at that moment, I was able in that moment to stay relational with him, and instead of, like, you know, going off on him, to reach out to him in a relational way, okay? And so kind of what I would like to go over, so some of this has been, some of this training that I went through has been put into a little book that anyone can buy on Amazon or wherever, and it's called The Joy Switch. And it says, The Joy Switch, How Your Brain's Secret Circuit Affects Your Relationships and How You Can Activate It. And it's written by Chris
and Maria.
Corsi. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Chris Corsi, yes, and I don't know if you noticed it or not, because it was different than when I looked when we talked, but for listeners out there, I know it's a lot of times a difficult financial time. The book is on sale. It's something like $10. It's 21% off right now for the paperback. There's also an audio and an ebook, so it's very affordable. Just FYI,
And also, if you go to Thrive, there's a Thrive Today channel on YouTube, and there are a couple webinars about the Joy Switch. Okay, so you can hear about it, more about it. Chris Corsi talks about it, and so you can learn more about it. But what's really good about this book, it actually goes through actual exercises. So there are 6 chapters, I think. And after each chapter, you actually go through some exercises. Like the first chapter, I'm looking at the first set of practice. Think about a time when you were clearly in relational mode, when you were your fully engaged self. Maybe it was a time when you were on vacation or during a weekend outing. What did you see in your thoughts, your feelings, your responses? Okay. And so you're supposed to, like, journal about that. And then the second one would be, now think about a time you fell out of relational mode, and it was obvious that you were relationally offline. What did you see in your thoughts, feelings, or responses? Okay. So, you know, so basically that's one exercise you can do, but there are, like, you know, three to five of these exercises after each chapter. And basically, I can live in relational mode, I could say, you know, in increasingly difficult circumstances, okay, because I've been practicing for 12 years, okay? And, I mean, I could detail some situations that happened even this past year where someone went off on me, okay? And I don't want to get into the details, but if I were to tell you, you would be horrified, okay? I was able in that moment to remain myself, okay, to not respond in kind, and to be able to get back to my work and focus on getting my job done so that I could go and take, you know, for example, go and be with my father as he was dying, okay? So, you know, despite having, you know, despite having two very difficult things, my father being, you know, being told that my dad's going to die in a couple of days, and my boss going off on me, okay, for something unrelated, I was able to say, okay, I was able to follow some of these, you know, practices and get my relational circuits back online and be able to function and get my work done and then get on the plane and go see my dad, okay? And
wow.
But before that sort of thing, I remember during my residency, there was an attending who would, you know, all of a sudden would snap and say something, okay? I had no way to come back. All I would do from that point on for the remainder of the month, I would just be like, you know, I would keep my mouth shut as much as I could. I would say very little. I would interact as little as possible, okay? Because I did not know how to come back and be relational with that person again. And then when I would go home, all I could talk about was, you know, Dr. D this, Dr. D that, you know, to my husband, to my mother, to my kids. You know, it was like, you know, it was completely occupying my mind and my, you know, taking away completely my peace for the day or even 2 or 3 days, okay? And really for a month, the full month that we'd be working together, you know, as far as interacting with them, I couldn't get back to relational mode. So that's kind of what I'm trying to tell you, is that this has made a huge difference for me. And I don't expect that I can teach you all of this in, you know, in half an hour, you know, because I kind of have to leave at 11. But I kind of want to introduce you to the concept, okay? So basically when you're relational in – yes, can you about to ask something?
No, I was – just to say that I think it's great to even get a start. It takes people time to digest. And while this has been a great concept, the whole last 12 years you've been working on it, you know, I was just thinking of the other underlying pressures of the last couple of years. And to me, you know, I took some skills. I'm welcoming hearing, I haven't read the Joy Switch. I'm welcoming hearing what you have to say, but I've taken, you know, a lot of other courses and training, and I've got to say that life on life's terms that I talk about, it, you know, at the beginning of every show, coupled with the stuff that's been going on out there for the last couple of years relentlessly, you know, I mean, this is something that's just been going on and on, not just COVID, but the politics, and now, you know, what's going on in Ukraine and all that, that being able to find a joy switch and to get your center and your balance back, when you say that sometimes it's hard for a brain injury survivor to hold ourselves back, the more stress we're under, not just the person cutting in front of us that could used to screw up 5 days, now screws up 5 minutes, but this heaping dumpster full of stuff that we're powerless over makes it even harder. To me, the more stress that is going on from many different angles makes it even more difficult for me. And I thought I was doing, well, I was doing really well from where I started to a number of years out. And this last couple of years, you know, I've been grabbing for every arrow in the quiver. So I appreciate the reminder, and it does take time for people to digest. So we may go on in another show with it, but this is a good start. And again, the book is inexpensive. If you even got it on audio or ebook, it's even less than $10, maybe $5. And not that we're the agent for this person, but in any case, a lot of ways to go about it. But go on, and I appreciate the fact that you're bringing this up. This may be a more difficult time to help support brain injury survivors and anyone else who's listening than it has been for a long time.
Well, one of the most important things is one thing that does bring joy to our lives is being with people. And we have not been able to be with people, you know, very much. You know, being in the presence of someone that you love and enjoy, your friends, you know, we haven't had, you know, we've been deprived of that so much in the last couple of years. Yeah. Okay, particularly, you know, the first year. But, you know, limited family gatherings, you know, even when you're engaging with people, it's different with a mask. You know, you don't see them smile. You have to, you know, kind of, you know, when you're passing somebody in the hall, you're both wearing masks. They don't know that you smiled at them, you know. You know, you have to, you know, actually say hi or whatever. It changes our interactions with one another. So every, you know, the relational joy that we would get from being with people, you know, just that simple smile is gone, you know, with the mask and everything. But thank God we're coming to the end of this, God willing. I really hope so.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to go through some checklists that are in this book. I'm not going to go through all the exercises, but to go through some of the checklists so you can kind of see the approach to this, okay? So one of the important things is to start asking yourself at various times during the day, am I in relational mode, okay? If you're starting to feel off, okay, you know, kind of stop yourself and say, okay, am I in relational mode? And there is an acronym, you know, CAKE, all right? CAKE spelled C-A-K-E, and this is in the book. Okay, curiosity is the C, okay? So if my relational circuits are on, I can feel curiosity about what other people are thinking and feeling, okay? So in terms of politics, okay, we can be curious about what the people on the other party are thinking and feeling, and we're interested in it, you know? We're not just, like, hold down in our position and arguing about it, but we're wanting to understand and listen to what they have to say, you know? So politics is a big thing that turns people's relational circuits off. Okay, so if your curiosity is on, you can actually see a person who's of the other political party and see them as valuable. Okay, if you don't, if you don't feel curious about what the other person is thinking or feeling, nor do you want to or care, then your relational circuits are off. Okay, all right. So we're going now to the A in CAKE, okay? So curiosity was the C. A is appreciation, okay? So if your relational circuits are on, I can feel appreciation in my thoughts and in my body. I remember what I feel thankful for. I feel gratitude. And I feel appreciation for the things, people, and moments I enjoy. So, so, you know, it's not just like, oh, do I have an appreciation list, okay? Is it, can I actually think about the items on this list, okay, and actually pause and feel the feeling that I felt at the time this thing happened or when I'm in the presence of this person or whatever, okay? So if you if you don't feel appreciation, if your relational circuits are off, you feel resentment. I do not feel appreciation or gratitude, nor do I want to. I am focused on what bothers, annoys, hurts, tempts, or frustrates me. Okay? So so that would be, you know, one way to turn tell if your relational circuits are on or off is whether you can feel appreciation or not. Okay? And if your mind is like fixed on what, you know, distressing about this person situation or whatever. Okay? So we went through curiosity and appreciation. K is kindness, okay? So if my relational circuits are on, I can feel kind and stay tender towards others right now. Like even when they're really annoying, you can still respond to them in a kind way, okay? Like I did with my son. I'm sorry, Timothy. What is it about our relationship that's not satisfying to you, okay? And really, my relationship with my son, that my second son, turned on that moment, on that statement, okay? Everything started getting better, I mean, slowly over time, but that was the turning point. All right, so now, if the relationship circuits are off, you would be the opposite of kind. I would rather win and get what I want in this moment. I don't care how I come across to others. I have no desire to be kind, okay? So we can all tell the difference. Like if someone's in the cashier, you know, waiting in the line at the cash register, you know, and the cash register, you know, the person, the cashier is taking a long time or there's something. You know, some people can, you know, can wait and, you know, still be civil and nice, okay? Their relational circuits are on. But there's some people whose relational circuits are off, okay? And it could be, you know, it could be just a bad day for them. Maybe they got bad news that they're, you know, their father's dying or, you know, we mustn't judge people by if the relational circuits are on or off, okay? They're not a bad person just because the relational circuits are off, okay? I was not a bad person when I was yelling at Timothy and saying, how dare you speak the way to your mother, okay? But I wasn't my best person, okay? So the relational circuits being on helps us to be our best, you know, our best that we can be as individuals, okay? So so curiosity, appreciation, kindness, okay? Eye contact, okay? That's the E. So if your relational circuits are on, you can look at other people in the eye, okay? And, you know, kind of meet them and not feel, you know, but if your relational circuits are off, you have no desire to look at people in the eye. You avoid eye contact, okay, because you don't want to be relational with them, okay? You're upset right. with them, angry with them, or you may not be upset or angry with them. There might be something in your mind that's upsetting, and you really don't, you know, like when you're walking in the halls at work, you know, sometimes you pass by somebody every day and you say hi or whatever, and then there, you know, there might be a day here or there where that person doesn't even see you, right? Because they're focused on something upsetting, or they're concentrating, or something, or whatever. The relational circuits are not on, okay? And we kind of have to be kind of attuned to that in other people, to you know, kind of you know recognize when our relational circuits are on and off, and also when their relational circuits are on or off, okay? So when our relational circuits are off, it's sort of like our brain goes into enemy mode, okay? So, like, if your limbic system is not working well, okay, if you're, like, offline, your relational circuits are offline, the next station below that in your brain, your emotional brain, is your amygdala, which is your flight, fight, fight, freeze, okay? So
yes.
when you are in that state, okay, you become like a predator, okay, you become T-Rex, or you become a possum, like you're afraid of every situation and you kind of withdraw, or you become like a statue, you can't do anything, you're just so, like just standing there, you know, that sort of, or you want to, you know, predator would be kind of like fight, okay, but or you're just, you know, that when you're stuck, when your relational circuits are off, that you're sucking more in that level, the amygdala. And that's a kind of a subcortical level. You can't really directly control. So it's like your brain goes into enemy mode, okay? And so one of the things, there's a checklist for determining if you're in enemy mode. The cake was one way of looking at it. This is another checklist. This is the one I learned to begin with. And it was, I just want to make a problem person or feeling go away. Okay, that's all I'm interested in right now. I don't want to listen to what others feel or say. My mind is locked onto something upsetting. I don't want to be connected to this person that I usually like. Okay, I just want to get away, fight, or freeze. Or I more aggressively interrogate, judge, and try to fix other people. Okay, so that would be like, so when your relational circuits are off, it's like you're in enemy mode. When your relational circuits are on, you're more like in friend mode. Okay, so what do you do when your relational circuits are off? Okay, and so I'm skipping forward to another chapter in this book, and we've come to another acronym, and this is CARS, okay, C-A-R-S.
CARS.
Okay, CARS, okay. Like driving cars, okay?
Yeah.
Like we're driving cars, C-A-R-S, okay?
And eating
the C
cake.
Is connected. Yeah. Well, anyway, these don't have to be in any, these are not in any particular order, okay? But these are some things we can do to bring our relational circuits back up, okay? To get us out of the flight, fright, fight and get us back to, you know, curiosity, appreciation, kindness, and eye contact, okay? Being able to see the people around us with care, to be able to focus on the situation at hand and be creative and come up with solutions. You know, it gives you access to your cortex, okay, when your relational circuits are on. So one of the ways we can get back online is to connect with things or people that stabilize me, okay? So maybe you do something, you know, like a crossword puzzle or walk on the beach or talk to a friend, talk it out with a friend, okay? Maybe you go to a husband or wife and say, you know, I really need a hug now, okay? And cry and let them know. And just, you know, that sort of like being with somebody kind of helps to dissipate some of that that relational pain, that pain or distress that we feel, and help us to come back, help the relational circuits to come back on board, okay? Again, there's a lot of examples in this book, and I'm just kind of skimming over it, okay? And then appreciation, okay? So this would be appreciation that you deliberately sort of seek, okay? So when your relational circuits are on, there's not much you can think about that you're thankful for, okay? So that's why it's important to have like a list in your phone, or maybe a folder of pictures maybe on your phone that you have appreciation, and just like, you know, maybe nature scenes or, you know, pictures of children smiling, people that you love, you know, that when you think, you know, look at them or think about them, are bringing back a good time or feeling in your brain, okay? So when you're actually remembering, something like that, it's like those circuits come back on again, the relational circuits, your ability to feel joy, the ability to feel creative, the ability to, you know, it helps your circuits come back on again, okay? In marriage counseling, one of the things that marriage counselors will often do is ask the couple, you know, the couple that's having problems, you know, tell me about your relationship. How did it start? And, you know, as they're telling the story, or maybe even start looking at pictures together from their early days, you know, some of what was going on in their brains gets reactivated. And so the relational circuits come back on again, and they can more easily talk through the situation, okay? So, taking a pause to practice deliberate appreciation, okay, like looking at a list, but not just a list. It would be sort of like, yeah, I'm thankful for my mother, okay? No, I'm not just thankful for my mother. I'm thankful for, you know, when I had a brain injury and how she was always there to listen to me. And she called me every day. And whatever I was upset about, she would listen to me for hours. And she spent hundreds of dollars on the phone during my first year of college, you know, during my college years after I had my brain injury, okay? So, you know, she was always there for me. Whenever I was upset, you know, so as I'm describing it, I can feel more and more and more appreciation for her. She's not just a name on the list. I'm thankful for my mother. It's more like I am thinking about the details of my mother, okay? Sort of like instead of like in a book where, you know, boy meet, you know, I went down the street and I met this guy at the store, okay? You know, the author wouldn't say that. The author would say, you know, it was a perfectly sunny day. The sun was shining on my face and I felt warm. And I would stroll down, you know, down this road with the trees overhanging. You know, the more detail you can put into this memory, the more appreciation you will feel for it, okay? And that's why pictures are also good, because it helps you recognize, you know, remember those circumstances around that joyful event or that peaceful scene or something like that. So that would be one. So going back to way you turn relational circuits back on, connections, appreciation. R is rest. Okay, one of the major things that help more volatile. Okay. You know, our relational circuits to turn off would be, you know, just simply because we haven't slept enough or we're really tired, okay? So sometimes we just need, like at work, I just need to take a mental break. I may still have a lot to do, but unless I take a mental break, nothing's going to get done. So I need to, you know, take a couple laps, you know, around the hall, maybe listen to some music. Give my mind a chance to get out of the cramp that it's in. And especially if you're feeling anxious or, you know, doing physical exercise really helps to dissipate that mental energy. Sort of like your mind is cramped, your muscles are cramped, and you're, you know, and just doing some exercise really helps to dissipate that nervous energy, okay? So rest, I guess exercise, you know, and then S is shalom my body, okay? And shalom my body is a set of exercises that you can look up on the YouTube channel that's called Thrive, and you can find these exercises under shalom my body. And Chris Corsi demonstrates them. But basically, I'm going to kind of tell you about them, but one is just simply yawning, okay? So, like, you turn your head to the left. Take a little deep breath in and out. Turn to the right, deep in and out. Okay?
Yeah,
and then
it.
As you're breathing out, yeah. You can say something. You can just say, like, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, like, 5. Okay, or you can say what Chris Corsi likes to say is, when I'm afraid, I will trust in you, O Lord, okay? Or something like that, something just a kind of maybe a favorite phrase or a saying that you have. Just, you know, yawn 3 times to the left, yawn 3 times to the right, or you can just even just do it straight ahead. It doesn't really matter if you yawn to the left and right. When you're practicing them in a group, you turn left and right to not be yawning in other people's faces. Okay, so and then another exercise is based on the Moro reflex. So you know how little babies, if they hear something something startles them, they throw their hands up, right? Have you noticed that?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
They throw their hands up and their legs kind of go. So this exercise is based on that reflex. Okay, so basically you take a quick breath in. Okay, and at the same time, put your hands up. Now, you wouldn't do this in public, okay? But I go to the bathroom sometimes and do it, okay? If I'm really needing to get my relational circuits back online, okay? So you kind of breathe a deep breathe in and put your hands up, and then bring them back down. Long breath it down, okay? 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Or, well, I'm afraid I won't trust in you, Lord. Okay? I don't know if you just did it with me, but if you did it, I can already feel it kind of like really calming me. Okay, and the third one is tapping your vagus nerve, okay? And the vagus nerve is a major nerve in your parasympathetic system, which is like sympathetic gets you like activated. Okay, ready to fight, flight, fight. Okay, the parasympathetic helps you digest and rest and slows your heart rate and breathing down. Okay, so what you do, and he demonstrates this. This is the hardest exercise to just describe to you on the phone. I mean, you know, like we're doing it right now. But basically, on either like where your breastbone meets your collarbone, about that area, you kind of tap left and right, left and right, left and right. As you're breathing in, and then as you're breathing out, you kind of make little circle massages. You stop tapping and you kind of just do this little circle massage, breathing out and saying, okay, I'm going in, tapping, and then breathing out, when I'm afraid I won't trust in you, Lord, okay? And this one, you kind of have to practice to find exactly the right spot. But basically, you're activating your parasympathetic system by doing it. And if you get on that Thrive Today YouTube channel and Shalom Your Body, you'll see those exercises demonstrated, okay? So one of the ways that, you know, to like kind of double-check everything to see that your relational circuits are on is something they call PEACE, this other checklist. And I'm going to find this checklist in this book. I'm just kind of cursorily going through this book. And one is like this peace check, okay? Peace means that like I'm paying attention to my body. Does my body feel calm, content, and relaxed? Or does my body feel strained, tense, and uptight, okay? And then the E is evaluate my breathing. Is my breathing deep and relaxed from my belly? Or is my breathing shallow and tense from my chest? Okay, so can I breathe like these deep belly breaths? Or am I kind of panting? Okay.
Yeah.
So that would be evaluate your breathing. And then the A in the peace is attention and focus. So I notice that my focus is on peace, positive and peaceful things, and this relaxes me. For me at work, I'm able to focus on my work again. Okay. I can put that distressful situation out of mind. Okay. I can focus on the work ahead of me and get my work done. Okay, but if I'm notice that my focus is on the problem, I replay the scenes of upsetting moments, conversations, or interactions. I focus on my pain, trying to avoid pain or make the pain stop. Nope, my relational circuits are still off. Okay, I still got to do some more of the car's work to come back on board. Okay. And then C in the peace check is calm or busy thoughts. So if my relational circuits are on, my thoughts are peaceful as I reflect on the things and people for which I'm thankful. If my relational circuits are off, my thoughts are racing or, for me, extremely slow. With people with brain injury, I talk about it like ping pong thoughts. When my relational circuits are off, it's like, there's too much going on. There's too much, you know, I can't make my thoughts go in a straight line, okay? Or my thoughts are so slowed that I can't think through anything, okay? My relational circuit's off. My thoughts are racing or my thoughts are way slow. Busy thoughts focus on the things or people which make me angry, afraid, hurt, whatever, okay? And then the E in the peace, okay? E is easing muscle tension, okay? And so, like, we talked about, like, taking a walk to kind of, release that tension. My muscles feel, if my relational circuits are on, my muscles feel loose, rested, and content. content, my muscles feel content. It's kind of a strange way of putting it. Or my body feels tense, anxious, and strained, okay? So, if you know, the peace check is a way just to kind of double check just by paying attention to your body and your thoughts and your, you know, and your feelings, whether, you know, whether you're back on board again. So, you know, we've only got like 5 minutes left, but do you, you know, any thoughts, Kim?
I really like analogies a lot. It really helps a lot. And I think that definitely I could recognize when my switches are off. One of the things you were saying about the masks and not seeing the smiling is, and then when you talked about the switches being off, disengaging, is that, you know, there's also muffled, the speech can be muffled too, you know, through the mask, as I'm sure. And one of the ways that when I was telling you that it was harder for me to use some of my tools during this last couple of years, some, you know, mounting tensions of personal and societal things going on, is that, you know, with the masks, true about, you know, the not seeing people smile and all of that kind of thing. But, you know, I got to the point when you said not caring, you know, I would hear somebody, I would say something, or vice versa, someone else would say something, and the person didn't understand clearly and would say, "What was that?" And I'd say, "Never mind, just never mind."
Yeah.
And normally I wouldn't do that, but it was just like, that wasn't,
you didn't
that
have
was
the,
enough.
You didn't have patience in that moment. That was part of your
right.
relationship that's turning off. Yeah. You didn't have the patience in that moment to, you know, to go there. So, yeah.
Exactly. So I think that, anyway, I appreciate everything that you shared with us, and I can certainly relate to everything you were talking about, and cake and cars. Like I said, I do like acronyms. Those are really helpful for anybody, but particularly people with brain injury, as a way to capsulize tools that help us function through those times and have, you know, the awareness that that's what's going on, and, you know, changes in relationships with others, changes in relationship with self. You know, if too many of those start going on or are consistent, then we really need to stop and take stock, you know, as to what's changed, that acknowledge that something has changed. And then what are we going to do about it? If it's a lot of things that we're powerless over, what we do have power over may not be the situation, but how we react to it. And that's why tools like this are so helpful, because it gives us options that we didn't have before. You know, I don't know about you, but the way that I coped before my brain injury is different. I was never super patient anyway, but I learned patience when I had my brain injury. And then, you know, when that year passed and I went back to work for a while and I was finding out my limits, you know, thinking I was fixed, like maybe we all do, a lot of us do anyway. You know, we were badly broken, but now we're going to go back to doing what we were doing. And as it's dawning on us through different experiences and feelings and shifts, that now we may look normal again, but it isn't exactly going to go back to the way it was before. You know, then learning those new boundaries really undermined that patience that I learned while I was sick and couldn't do anything, forced patience that I became comfortable with, but then the frustration of the change and feeling for a while like it was a mean trick, you know, that, okay, I went through this part of the process, half of the process, actually, as it turns out, you know, the happening and the initial recovering, but when you have the takeaways, like what you're talking about, we need tools, and there really isn't, you found a good person that you've worked with, but, you know, for most of us, there isn't a person to be able to offer these various tools to deal with the after effects of brain injury, the things that are many times permanent. They don't go away. What we do is learn to temper them by having a variety of tools and learning new skills to deal. And so that's why, anyway, these talks and this material and these tools are all extremely appreciated, because this is the place I learned a lot of what I learned, have learned, you know, as it's been almost 12 years every Wednesday night that I've been here. You've contributed a lot, but that's hundreds and hundreds of guests that have offered things my doctor never told me. And they've been my saving grace, you know, during this time, that time, all the time. Just a little more, sometimes easier to use than others, you know, like you said. When we get heaped on, it's harder. But one of those appreciation or gratitude elements for me is that those things are there to fall back on. You know, I find myself in an off switch, have it come to my awareness, say, this isn't where I want to be. Now I need to take the action. Well, I didn't have those options before. You know, I wasn't aware. Things were just playing out while I had an off switch. And B, at the point I would have become aware, I wouldn't have known what action to take, because they were going to be new skills for me. So I appreciate very much you bringing this to us. And that's the Joy Switch. And you can find it on Amazon in book, ebook, audiobook, $10 or under. And Dr. Maria has been great. We should get a hold of him and tell him that he owes you a, let's see, from what he's making, $3.50. He owes you 50 cents, a commission for bringing this material to us. Just kidding. But it's great, great material, and it's a nice piece. I also like it when people write in an encapsulated way, because there's a lot of us, probably not you, because you've got to read reports with small print and stuff, but, you know, a lot of us, I used to be a voracious reader, and I just can't read volumes and small print now, and I really appreciate powerful messages in a short form like that. Easier for me to remember, and so are acronyms. So I appreciate it. I hope you are able to get your work done that you have to get done tonight. Are you there? Maria, are you able to hear me?
I am. Can you hear me better?
Oh, Yeah, now I can hear you.
I was in the car. I was in the car because I knew I'm coming back to work. But I wanted to say a couple more things about the book. About the book, it's about not much bigger than the size of your hand, okay? And it's pretty short, just like 100 pages. I mean, I think it's a little bit more than 100, but it's not very long. And, you know, it's meant to be read a little bit at a time and practiced. So, anyway, I do need to get off because I'm going through this screening thing at work. But I can, you know, you can keep talking and I can talk a little bit more.
Huh. We'll have to find out about getting screened at work. What do they screen you for at work?
Do you have any COVID symptoms? Are you coming into work? That whole thing. So I'm still at the VA. Do you have a mask? Okay, so yes. Those are my screening questions. So anyway.
You know, I just have a quick, and then I'll let you go, and not a fair question. I'll ask you some other time. But, you know, I'm more confused than I was in the beginning because science, I don't believe, it's changed and it hasn't changed. But, you know, this shift after the first of the year of acting like COVID was over in that we're not hearing about it on the news. The politicians aren't talking about it. The State of the Union was without masks last night. People who didn't want to believe it in the first place are overjoyed to think that life has gone back to normal. And I know three people that have gotten this in the last 2 weeks, and a handful of people that are I don't know if it's going to be forever, but they left the hospital with oxygen. They are using oxygen now, and, you know, it's by no means over, but it is very confusing to have, no pun or anything intended, this is an old saying, the Chinese water torture, drip, 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 of constantly hearing about something for 2 years, every time you turned on the TV, opened a magazine, turned around, talked to people everywhere, drowning us, and then nothing changes. You know, the vaccine we hoped would get rid of it didn't. It mitigated it, made a good therapeutic. But the new year started and suddenly nobody's talking. So I'm glad that they're still screening and taking precautions. It's good to hear it from other people because we're certainly not hearing it anymore from others had nothing more to talk about before.
It's not over, okay, but I do think we're coming to the tail end of it as far as it being a pandemic, okay? And, you know, especially this Omicron, I mean, I have a friend whose brother, and I did know him, he was an acquaintance, died with COVID just a couple weeks ago, and he died of Omicron. Yeah. So it's not, you know, we're not, and he was relatively young, he was thin, he was relatively young, he was in his 60s, but he looked healthy and strong. You would never have thought of him as being at risk. Okay.
Right.
Oh, I've got to go back to my car and get my mask. I can't go in the building without my mask. Okay. In any case, you know, it's also good that we move on as well. Okay. So, I mean, this thing's probably going to be with us for a very long time. But I think that in the course of, you know, I think this Omicron blew through the population. I mean, it seemed like every other person I was talking to had several people in their family, you know, who gotten it. I don't know. I'm sure you probably had that happen.
Me
too. You know, in January and February. So I kind of think Omicron sort of blew through the population. And if you're going to, you know, those who were susceptible to it, you know, for the most part, probably got it. And when people, and hopefully we don't have that much you know, going around anymore. Our numbers here at the hospital have dramatically plummeted, okay, because we get updates every week. So, you know.
I was going to ask you that, if you had COVID patients there.
Oh, yeah, we've got COVID patients here. So, and I've seen such strange pathology. I've seen the strange thing COVID can cause. It's a bad disease. So, but,
well,
know,
someday come back and talk to us about that. I hope it's over too. I'm watching the B2 stealth variant now. It will be interesting to see. I don't know. I'm put off with it, you know, when they, one thing was talking about natural immunity, and I know a number of people, you know, the vaccine seemed to last 6 months before the people got the booster. It seemed like it was about 6 months. And I know quite a few people who have gotten COVID a second time, and it's been at the fifth, sixth, or seventh month. So, you know, when they were talking about natural immunity being or doing what the vaccine was, we hoped the vaccine would do, that's not true either. So, I don't know. It's interesting. No one really knows. They weren't shy of sharing opinions before, and now you just don't hear anything. So, yeah, I hope we're at the end of it. It's been a long time, and it's a bad time to be, you know, dealing in military conflict. It's like, I was thinking about it the other day, and then I'm going to let you go, but in 2019, you were gone. You know, you weren't still here, but you might be aware because you have family. But, you know, 2019 was the worst flooding that we'd ever had in the Midwest. It was Nebraska, Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, you know, those whole areas. Then 2020, the pandemic starts. So 2020, 2021, going into 2022. And now they're, you know, talking about military conflict. And I'm like, it's really making my, it's tampering with my switch. So it was really good that you came to talk about the joy switch tonight. And I appreciate it. And good luck with your editing and getting everything done tonight that you need to get done. I appreciate it that you came to the show after everything hit you unexpectedly and piled up on you. So good luck getting that all done.
Okay. All right. I'm just about to get on the elevator, so it's about to lose you. So just perfect timing.
All right. Okay. Good night. Bye. And thanks so much.
Bye.
All right.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, that was Dr. Maria Romanis and The Joy Switch by Corsi, is the last name of the person. In fact, I have it here in my program notes. Chris M. Corsi, Corsey. And it's, like she said, it's a short book. The acronyms are great. They have little exercises to be done there, and I think that that's a really good thing. So now Dr. Maria, for those of you who don't know, she's been a frequent contributor over the years to the show, a regular guest that I've had, and she is a pathologist, a doctor of pathology at the VA hospital in Florida. When I met her, she was at the VA hospital in Kansas. And then, like a lot of us who get to be a certain age and get sick of the weather in the Midwest, she was smart and moved to Florida, still with the VA. And she actually became a pathologist after her very severe brain injury from a car accident. The only difference is she wanted to be a different kind of doctor, and decided that that was going to be too difficult to do after her brain injury. And the specifics of that particular specialty, and decided, though, that she wasn't going to quit. She didn't let that stop her, and she went on and went to school and now has been a practicing lead doctor of pathology for many years now. And so the fact that we have a game-changing event that doesn't allow us to do what we planned or how we planned it is no reason to quit. That's one of the things we talk about, one of the many things we talk about in Brain Injury Awareness Month, are skills like the joy switch and many others that help us cope when we find out that we're not going to go back to exactly the way things were before. But what we need is to redirect our purpose to do something that gives us purpose to continue moving forward, to not get stuck or go backwards. When you live through a brain injury, I can't help but think there's a reason. You know, sometimes there's people who have survivor guilt, you know. They wonder why somebody that had the same kind of incident didn't make it and why they did. Well, that's a question for God. I don't spend a lot of time pondering that. I did. So that means to me that there's a reason. The reason means that we share our experience, strength, and hope with others. I have mentioned before on the show that my initial ruptured brain aneurysm, which was considered an acquired brain injury, an ABI versus a TBI, a TBI comes from an external force, like a car accident or a concussion from a direct hit, an external force. An ABI, an acquired brain injury, is something that originates on the inside, like a stroke or an aneurysm, brain tumor, things like that. For a long time, they were separate, and they each have their own month, awareness month. One of them is in September, and Brain Injury Awareness Month, which used to be TBI Awareness Month, may still be in some places. People just can't decide, and it has nothing to do with the people or their injury. It has to do with politics, like so many things do. It has to do with alliances, associations, nonprofits, things that generate money. There can only be so many of those, right? So just about every malady you know has put a stamp on a certain month, got a certain color ribbon, and they have awareness month. Well, that is good. It's a good thing that there's awareness month. I will tell you that the people who have a brain injury are aware every day of their brain injury. Why is there Brain Injury Awareness Month? It's to help other people know more. It's a time where there's a lot of fundraising going on. A walk where you buy the scratchy t-shirt and, you know, go for the brain walk. Time for a lot of different things. But in any case, now ABI has been classified along with TBI and put under the big umbrella of brain injury. Now, different support groups, different associations, alliances will still separate them. But again, it's not because of the people, the survivors, or the caregivers. It's other reasons that have nothing to do with us. One thing that has surprised me a lot is everybody's heard of, knows something about cancer, diabetes, heart disease. I think heart disease is the number one killer. Cancer, I think, number two. And yet there's, I believe, 3.6 million brain injuries a year, which is a huge amount, 3.6 million per year. And yet so few people so many people don't know anything about it. A lot of medical practitioners don't know that much about it. I also tell another story about a surgeon, the go-to neurosurgeon in our town, and I think that this would go pretty well for any town. A new support group was going to be started here in town, and my injury happened in 1995. That was before there was internet, before there were support groups. We didn't have any of those here. So no social media, no internet, believe it or not. Cell phones were new then, and you didn't text on them or anything like that. They were the size of a shoebox. I remember because my dad called the hospital. Mine happened on January 9th of 1995, and he had gotten his new cell phone for Christmas, 1994. So I have some recollection of that. And when I went through what I did in about a year of getting functional after this, there wasn't the kind of things that there are now where you could meet other people. Like on social media, there are groups. If you have had a brain aneurysm, a stroke, TBI, certain types of TBIs, which we'll be talking about throughout the month. Last week, even though it wasn't March yet, Simon and I on the Simon Says segment took a look at falls. We spent the whole show on falls, and it was talking about the incidence of falls in causing traumatic brain injury. And about 43%, close to half of the leading causes of TBI come from falls. And we spent last week, I guess was really our kickoff to March for the last show in February, and we exclusively made the show on falls. Gave some examples because we each had had a fall in the last year. Some of the things that cause it, fall prevention programs that can, if balance is an issue, programs and exercises people can do, contributing factors. And we talked about Bob Saget. It was one of the reasons we did that show last week. It was timely. There was a young, healthy person who fell, and it killed him. So that was in the news, and that was the reason we decided to go ahead and and do the show, because we also knew Awareness Month was coming up and it was so prevalent. In any case, about 6 years ago, I guess, a support group was going to start. And it was going to be held at the medical center, and the go-to person for handling aneurysms or ABI type things, but specifically aneurysm, I think you'll get the point, was attending the support group. And we went around and introduced ourselves, and a lot of the people that were there, I was the senior in how long I had had my brain injury, and a lot of people, the predominant number of people that were at this group probably had this surgeon do the work. And one of the comments he made when it came around to him, he introduced himself and he said that he was so grateful that there was a support group, because, and as he looked around at everyone in the room, he commented, a lot of you are my, have been my patients, are my patients. And the rest of you went through similar surgery or procedures. And all of you come back with certain common permanent takeaways. And me, my partner, we listen, but we don't know what to tell you. Because what we do every day, we're neurosurgeons, and we do surgery. All day long, we go from surgical suite to surgical suite to surgical suite to surgical suite to surgical suite. And when we're not physically doing surgery, we're doing the follow-up with the patients we've done the surgery on to make sure the surgery took, take out stitches if that's the case. And then we study new techniques, brushing up on current techniques. But our specialty is surgery. And so we don't know when it comes to the things like sensory overload, neurofatigue. He didn't say this. I'm saying this because I made a list over the last, over a decade that I've been on radio, and I knew a little of what he was talking about because I made a list, trying to see if I can find it here, but depression, sleep issues, anxiety, or PTSD, PTS, depending on who you ask these days. I don't know if they've requalified it or not. I said sensory overload. I have about 12 things that I wrote down, and so the patients are coming back and they're talking to the doctors about things, and the doctors just really don't have a solution. Now, I tried, as many have, to go to a neurologist, and that was not my answer. That person had their specialty, and it wasn't helping people who had had other types of brain injury. And so treatment becomes somewhat piecemeal in that they usually always send you to a shrink who usually always assumes you're going to be depressed and put you on an antidepressant, maybe some biofeedback, little EMDR, some skills training. The interesting thing, though, is that there isn't one. Maybe you have, and if you do, you're free to call in now if you like. The number is 424-243-9540, 424-243-9540. But in any case, there was no doctor who could orchestrate, maybe not a doctor who could do everything, but could be the ringleader, if you will. I can't find the word I'm really looking for, but that'll do it. And be able to coordinate our care. One doctor who is sending us to whatever practitioners it would take to help us with our symptoms. If the problem is with balance, if the problem is with chronic pain, whatever the problem might be, the problems might be, usually more than one. Some people have that tendonitis, the ringing in the ears, chronic headaches. And there's not just one person, practitioner, familiar enough with brain injury that they can address or be the center of influence to refer us to practitioners who can deal with all of it, a record of all of it, and have a list of practitioners that deal with the whole circle. And so what we do as survivors is go out and try things on our own, a lot of different things on our own, both in the traditional medical model, medications, that sort of thing, physical therapy, those types of things. And then we start switching because we get frustrated and we can't find it in the traditional medical model. And so we go and try things like skills training. DBT is one of them. EMDR, which is a tapping, meditation, yoga, acupuncture, pressure, cranial sacral, forms of gentle exercise that don't make our injury worse, music therapy, art therapy. We hear of all of these things as we go. Now, back in my time, until whenever the internet was on everyone's desk and social media came about, I don't know when that was, but for all those years, I didn't talk about my brain injury. I didn't talk about the after effects. They didn't show. I didn't have a tell at that time, except I seemed like I forgot things a lot, was kind of forgetful that, oh, that was one of the things I forgot to mention, short-term memory loss. Something that a lot of us suffer. Because there wasn't anyone to tell who got it. And a lot of people who don't believe it, or they minimize and think you're overblowing, or they don't know what the answer is, so, you know, you just stop talking. And then you feel isolated. A lot of you, probably more of you would get this now. The listeners here, I think, get it. And the caregivers likely get it. But others, after just going through 2 years of COVID, might understand what isolation and loneliness there is in isolation and polarization that a person goes through at the beginning of brain injury, because their world has been turned upside down, their plans have been turned upside down, their skill set has been turned upside down, shuffled like a deck of cards. Some of those skills that they had before aren't as strong as they were before, and some are still there. But it's interesting, in my case, it took me a while to realize that some of those skills weren't gone. They just couldn't be applied the way that I had been applying them in my career for 25 years before. I couldn't use them in the same way and make it work. So I assumed they were burnt skill set. It wasn't there anymore. That I was going to have to completely start over. Well, in a way I did. But I did find out after a time that my skill set wasn't burned. I just needed to learn to reframe it and to be honest about the fact. Here's an acronym for you, HOW. Be honest about the fact that I wasn't going to be able to live life the way I had done before. Be open-minded that my life wasn't over because I didn't recognize it, and I was impatient because I wasn't getting the help, the solutions, the answers that I wanted right now. I went through a craniotomy. I spent a year trying to get back to some kind of resemblance of my life the way it was before. I did all those things. So, a lot of us, what we're doing is we're going through a grieving process. We just don't realize it. We don't think we're going through a grieving process because we lived. What we don't understand is we're going through a grieving process because we lived, but our life isn't working the way it did before. And we don't have tools yet to be able to adapt, or in this case, W. The H was the honesty, to be honest with ourselves. The O, to be open-minded, that there will be a solution. And the W, to be willing to try. You don't quit and stay on the bench. When you feel like you've struck out, you become willing to try things outside of the traditional medical model. You become willing to try, whether it's for work or for pleasure or for relationships with friends, family, whatever, you become willing to try things different than you did them before. And you don't judge yourself on the outcome. Applaud yourself on the try. And you're grateful for the process, because there isn't really a destination until the end of the line. Our life is the process. I heard someone say once on a tombstone that you see the year of birth and the year of death, dash in between, is our life. So that dash in between is the process of living our life, and we're going to have changes in our life that we're going to have to learn to deal with. I was talking to someone the other day about choices, because it's easy, especially if someone comes from a negative environment, to be negative, angry, bitter, because this change has come upon your life for a while. Anger is one of the steps in the grief process. But the deal about that is if you do believe there's a reason why you made it, not questioning exactly what that reason is, but starting the journey to find out what it is for you, then you're going to make attempts, not judge yourself on how you do. If one of the things that you've decided to try doesn't work to your satisfaction, you don't stop. You just try something else. Because once you get going powered by the try and you're torn down by staying in defeat and letting the anger and the bitterness eat you alive. And so if you believe there's a reason why you're still here, then it really is incumbent on you not to become that angry, bitter person who wants to live the rest of their life being miserable. And so I brought up the fact that it's a choice. And somebody said, how can you say it's a choice? This happened to me, and you can't even imagine what that's like. That's true. I couldn't imagine. I could have compassion. I could have a lot of things for what that person was talking about, but no, I never had, I don't know exactly how that is. But I do know today that I have a choice. I can spend every day for the rest of my life being angry and miserable and bitter because things aren't the way that I would have them or the way that I had planned or the way that I would like them to be. Good reasons, you know, good reasons to be angry and bitter. But I don't believe that's why I'm still here. Another wise person in my life once said, everyone you meet in life is your teacher. Some teach you how to do things right, and others teach you how to do things wrong. And I think that's very true as well. I look at people who live life to the fullest they can, to the fullest they can with the limitations and the cards they've been dealt, and still find that joy switch Maria was talking about. Think about the things that they can do, not focus on the things that they can't do. Think about things that they'd like to try that they didn't make time for before their injury because they were busy having that life. And now you've got an opportunity to start a new life and experience some new things. And a lot of us would say, including myself, that gotten the opportunity, I don't know how many of us, some would say they're grateful for their brain injury because it allowed a shift in their life. I don't know that I could go that far. That was a horrible experience to have and a horrible time. However, if things wouldn't have happened exactly like they did, I wouldn't have had the opportunity or made the time to try so many things that have brought me joy in my life that I wouldn't have made the time for, wouldn't have thought of, wouldn't have had the inclination for, would have quit the first time I tried something and I didn't do it perfectly. And that would have been sad. This event in my life, and then I went on in 2012 and had a bad fall. Again, almost half of the TBIs, and then I did get a TBI to go with my ABI. I had a whiplash concussion, and that wasn't even a direct hit from anything. When I fell, my neck snapped. I fell forward and then rocked back, and my neck snapped, and it hurt my neck. My neck is injured, and I get a lot more headaches now. And so it exacerbated some of the residuals I was left with from my first injury in 95, when in 2012 I added the TBI, which had symptoms of its own. And by then I realized that an important thing for me was to remember the how, to remember to take one day at a time. I can't look back. Back is over. You can't unring the bell. The cow's already out of the barn. I don't know how many trite sayings there are to describe that, but the past is what the word implies. It's past. It's over. It's done. Well, you get to take away from that are lessons, but you can't change the reality of the past. The future, none of us are guaranteed. None of us are guaranteed. And if we doubted that before the last 2 years of COVID, then all of you should know it now. We who are survivors of brain injury should understand from our experience that no matter what shape we're in, what color we're in, what our political leaning, what blah, what wokeness, all of the stuff that we talk about, whatever, that none of us are guaranteed another day. That's something that unites us in our humanity, is there is no guarantee. So while we want to plan, we're going to have to be flexible and not spend all of our time in the future. My life will be better when this happens, when that happens, if I do this, if someone else will do that. Spend too much time in the future and get hit by a bolt of lightning tomorrow, and you just wasted a lot of time on your last day on earth, when there might have been a beautiful garden around you or the buds just coming out in the trees. And that's not happening yet here, by the way. But like Maria said, perhaps a smile from a loved one, a pleasant exchange with someone. Whatever it might be that brings you joy, try to tap into that every day. We talk about having good days and bad days. I've even got a song called Good Days, Bad Days on here. But the truth of the matter is, it doesn't have to be a good day or a bad day. We can start the day over. That's another choice. Instead of choosing to be negative, bitter, resentful, frustrated, we can choose to be willing to be happy, positive, to look at the bright side, to see the cup is half full, not half empty. Excuse me, I guess we're running out of time, just in time for my voice. Those are choices, no matter what we've been through, how we respond. So for those that don't understand, it's a choice. If you had been through what I've been through, you'd be this way too. Well, I hope not. I'd wind up spending a lot of time alone, alienating a lot of people, and making myself miserable. So, my choice would be to deal with it and let it go, to feel the feeling and acknowledge it. Don't want to stuff it and ignore it. Those come back to bite you in the ass. But to acknowledge what happened and to look back but not stare. To move forward and plan the best we can, the most optimistically with the cards we've been dealt. And to expect things to come into our life when our life seems to be going really well that are going to upset the apple cart. Just because it does. Balance is something we're always striving for, whether we know it or not. We respond way far one way and then compensate by responding way far the other way. And what the process is, that dash between our birth year and our death year, our process, is by learning to make our way to the middle and to find happiness and to have our joy switch more engaged than turned off. And both of those things are going to happen off and on throughout our lives. But to have the tools and to not forget indefinitely that we have those tools is a good thing. So we're just coming down to the end of the show. You probably wanted to know nearly half of TBIs are caused by falls. I'm going to be talking with Karen next week. The week after, there is a second clinical trial going on about a medication that helps mitigate the effects of concussion. On the 16th, I believe it is, the next Wednesday, I'm super excited about a former professional boxer, Ray Cagliani, who experienced second impact that I'll definitely be plugging with you. Some of you might have seen on Facebook a picture of me with a boxing glove holding up a book. And so we're going to be talking about what happens in concussion when you get second impact. You're not over your first and you take repeated hits. And some of you know that that can lead to degenerative brain diseases. You were accustomed to hearing about it in the NFL. This example will be with the most kind, salt-of-the-earth, charming man that I've met in a long time, new. So Ray and possibly his wife, Patty, will be on the 16th. And anyway, I don't have my calendar in front of me, but those are some of the shows I have coming up this month. We'll all have to do, it's Brain Injury Radio. Sometimes I talk about other things because we all need to know about inspiration, positive thinking, and we're going to get that. But we're going to get that this month just out of brain injury topics and survivors. So real quick, like, I will just say that 11% of TBIs are caused by assaults. Almost 15% caused by motor vehicle accidents. About 15.5% are caused by being struck by or against your head getting hit by something. And unknown, 19%. Okay, so we'll learn what unknown is sometime before the end of the month. But those are the leading causes for traumatic brain injuries. and we'll be talking about a number of those things. The Brain Injury Association of America has a campaign going this year, 2022, for called More Than My Brain Injury. Hashtag More Than My Brain Injury. And I don't know if they, with Christabel Braden, who is a musician, and we all know music is a healing thing, but Christabel wrote a song a long time ago called More to Me. And I'm going to play that for you right now. She is a survivor. Christabel's been a guest on my show before. It's CristabelBraden.com. CristabelBraden.com. She's got a Facebook page. I encourage you to like her. She's very likable. And a lot of her music is the cathartic move through her brain injury. And so the theme is There's More to Me in her song from long ago, and it happens to be the Brain Injury Association's theme for the 2022 Brain Injury Awareness Month. And so I think tonight both Maria and Michael, who came on first, are a great example that there can be so much more beyond our injury as our life goes on, but a lot of it has to do with our attitude and our choices. And so with that, I'm going to close out with Christabel Braden. I will see you next week. Good night and God bless everybody. I appreciate you listening. Thanks for being here and your continued support after all these years. So, Christabel Braden, More to Me, and I'll see you next week. Good night.
Who have I become? Wrapped up in a memory. Where do I belong? It's been so long, and every time I try to make of anything, find that I'm stressed about everything. This isn't who I used to be. When the waves came and when the storm raged, found myself falling into the ground. When the wind blew, that's when it fell through, and I don't know how to turn. When the waves came and when the storm raged, found myself